No one explained why they asked me to speak on this topic. And I, as you will, I trust some of you have read my new book, my seventh book, but the first book I've written that I feel is an important volume. Until now, it's six volumes of pure scholarship. If you're interested, you're interested. If not, not. But my new book, From Washington Avenue to Washington Street, you will find that my wife and I worked for 10 years for the Mossad in communist Russia. And let me begin. Every story I mention is 101% true. Life has been exciting, better than any novel or any movie or any TV series. Sometimes a little event changes the world. I want to tell you a little story about the second most important influence in my life. The first influence, Mori Rebbe, Rav Yosef Dov Halevi Soloveitchik, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. The second influence is a Jew whose name I could not mention until the security clause was removed. His name is Aryeh Kroll, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Aryeh Kroll was a Russian kid. His father was a shaykhet. Towards the end of the 1930s, he and his mother got out, joined the father who had preceded them to Palestine. They finally got visas. Kid came about 12, 13, joined B'nai Akiva. And he was a B'nai Akivanik. He was one of the founders of the kibbutz, which has been in the news for years now. It's right next to the Gaza Strip, Kibbutz Sad, a religious kibbutz. You all should recognize the name. And Aryeh Kroll had tremendous ability, simply as an organizer, as someone who could run an operation. And he worked his way up to the maskir, to the head secretary, the man who directed Kibbutz Sad. Finished 25 years of work, and he's now entitled to a trip overseas. This is about 1965. Those of you who grew up in a kibbutz know that you're not an independent citizen. It's more or less like communist Russia. You have to go before the committee, and they have to approve your trip. And Aryeh tells the committee he wants to visit Russia. At that time, Israelis could visit. He wants to see his two sisters who survived the Holocaust, and he hasn't seen them since the 1930s. And the kibbutz approves the trip, and Aryeh joins a group of Israelis going to tour. And they were briefed beforehand that, of course, in Russia there's no religion, there are no shuls. In every community there's one shul, what the communists called a functioning church or a functioning synagogue. And the communists were very smart. If some old babushka wanted to go to church Sunday morning, let her go. Take the steam out of the pressure cooker. If some old Jews want to sit in the one synagogue in Moscow, the Choral Synagogue, let them go. And they, plenty of Jewish KGB, I wouldn't call them agents, but they cooperated for food, for clothes, would report if there was anything out of the ordinary. So Aryeh goes to Russia, and they tour, and Aryeh told me how his first few days there, he couldn't even speak Russian. Forgot all his Russian. I mean, you think for a moment, I'm still speaking English. I live in Israel 44 years, and I'm not. But I didn't forget my English. Got his Russian. And they're touring. He meets his sisters. They come to Moscow. And one night he goes to sleep. And if you ever were in a Russian hotel before the fall of communism, on every floor there was a floor lady. The floor lady, her job was to report anything out of the ordinary to the KGB. She was there to keep an eye on you. And you went to sleep early, the floor lady is sitting there, you have a big day the next morning, and suddenly there's a terrible knock on Aryeh's door. And Aryeh opens the door, and it's one of the other Israeli women, and she says, Aryeh, Aryeh, Tegred Lamata, come down with me to the lobby. My uncle came in from where he lives in Siberia, and he wants to see a man, he wants to see a Jew. And Aryeh was wearing pajamas, takes off the pajamas, puts on his kibbutz clothes, goes down to the lobby, and this Jew embraces Aryeh, and he shows him a talis stained with blood, and he tells Aryeh, Aryeh, hand me a tzu. They were speaking Yiddish and Russian, but he was speaking Yiddish, his native language. And he says to Aryeh, this talis accompanied me in World War II. It got bloody. It accompanied me when I had to make a living, and I went all over Russia, and I wind up in Novosibirsk. And he says, I hear in the state of Israel, they manufacture new taliyot, what you call talisim. He says, if I could only have a new Israeli talis, a talis from Eretz Yisrael, I would say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, I am ready to die, bury me in this new beautiful talis. And Aryeh, who was hard as rocks, hard as nails, he was a tough guy, breaks into tears, runs to his room, grabs his talis, and gives it to this individual. Aryeh goes back to the kibbutz, and he figures, all right, I saw her, got to get back to life. But it haunts him what he saw. He calls Stay Boker. Those years, you had one key phone in each kibbutz. Stay Boker was different because who is their most prominent resident? No, Ben Gurion, the Alta, Hasakain, BG, whatever you knew him by. And he asked to speak to BG, and BG knew him because he had been the maskir of Psad. He was a public figure. And he makes an appointment to see BG. Every syllable I'm telling you I heard directly from Aryeh Kroll was later written up when he got Trask Yisrael, when the Iron Curtain fell. It was in every newspaper, word by word, and it appears in English in Washington. And Aryeh goes to BG, and he's all excited, and he tells Ben-Gurion, listen, what I saw in Russia after so many years of communism, people are still Jewish. They want Taliyot, they want Magen Davids, they want to know about Israel. We have to establish an organization to deal with them, to reach out to them, and they're going to come in Aliyah. And BG tells Aryeh, Aryeh, I thought you were an intelligent person. You're a little naive. You think you're going to fight the communist empire and the Jews are going to come in Aliyah. Aryeh, go back to the kibbutz and relax. Aryeh goes back to the kibbutz, slightly broken in spirit, goes back to work. 2 weeks later, 11 o'clock at night, the whole kibbutz is asleep. They come running to Aryeh from the maskirut, the central office of the kibbutz, where there's always one person there 24-7 in case of an emergency to answer the phone, the one phone. Aryeh, Tavo, someone is on the line for you. It sounds important. And Aryeh comes to the phone and he says, Shalom, Shalom, Aryeh Kroll medaber. And the person says to Aryeh, Yesh lecha chaver tov b'stei boker. You have a good friend. And Aryeh says, who am I speaking to? And he tells him, Shaul Avigua. If anyone doesn't know who Shaul Avigua was, make believe you do, so the ignorant cares for the wise. Look him up in Encyclopedia Judaica. He was one of the prime movers of the Mossad. He was a legendary figure. He was the head of Aliyah Bet. After World War II, when they brought thousands of Jewish children who survived illegally to Palestine. And Aryeh and Shol Avigur makes an appointment to see Aryeh. Aryeh is shaking and he tells him, Aryeh, listen, the Mossad has had a branch since 1952. It's called the Nativ, pathway from Tel Aviv to Moscow. Nativ, that deals with Russian Jewry. But I spoke to my people in the Mossad, they like you. They love the way you came back. They want to meet with you, they've checked you out. And very shortly, while all this is happening, the Six-Day War breaks out, and besides resulting in the Aliyah of Malka and Aaron Rakefet at the time of Rothkopf, there was another very important result. Russia broke off relations with Israel. No Israeli could get to Russia. Aryeh Kroll starts working for the Mossad, and he comes up with a brilliant idea. If you look into Time magazine, right after the Yom Kippur War, there was an article on Israel and espionage, and the Time magazine made a very important point. There is no other country in the world where the majority of the population could very well be spies like the State of Israel. Why? What makes the State of Israel unique at that time? The majority of the population had two passports. You look at Rakefet Dash Rothkopf, am I an Israeli or am I an American? The truth is on both. Ger v'toshav, Anochi Machem, Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik used to give so much different Torah that I've repeated and added to, but we have a dual existence. We're Jews, we're different. Ger. We're human beings. We live like any other human being, and we rejoice when Israel's universities of research will find the cure for cancer. We have dual identity. You certainly have dual identity if you have two passports. And if you have two passports, it's possible to fool the world. You are an Israeli in Israel. The minute you cross the border, you are an American citizen living in Queens. And Aryeh understood that with this dual identity, we can send endless Israelis to Russia. And then it began, the first person sent, I always mention his name, he's no longer alive, he was a British gentleman from Bnei Akiva. His name was Jackson. I get confused with Yankelevich because you translated it, Yankelevich to Jackson, to Ben Yaakov when he went in Aliyah. And Jackson was the first one Aryeh sent. Later very active in Kibbutz Hadati, but it began a trend. Now, dual passport. Let me explain what a dual passport means. When Malka and I were approached by the Mossad, we got involved very heavily and we succeeded, and it became my responsibility to find candidates with a dual passport. Now, I needed people, and I'll explain why in a few minutes, I needed people who could teach Gemara, who could teach Talmud. So we came up with many candidates. It was a long process. We had to look for people. First of all, we preferred people who would go with their lives. We wanted it to look natural. We wanted happily married couples who don't have to talk too much to each other because every hotel room is bugged. But a happily married couple, you all understand, when my wife goes like this, if she goes like this, I understand, this way, that way, we don't have to talk. In addition, and this is the catch, I can tell you there was a member of the UN legation, the Israeli legation at the start of the State of Israel, a big Talmud Chacham. He had children in America while he was here. If you're born in the United States, you are an automatic citizen. His son is a wonderful Talmud Chacham. And we debated, perhaps we can use the son. No. We said, no, we can't. Why? He may have dual citizenship. But the minute he would start to speak English with an Israeli accent, they would sense there's something strange here. See, the advantage of someone born and steeped in America, in Canada, in England, in Australia, you are really a dual personality. When I get off the plane, this is before my students taught me to use a computer. Today, I don't have to budge out of my office in Gris. But I remember the first thing when I got off the plane, what did the Yankees do? You understand, I'm from the Bronx. I lived a 20-minute walk from Yankee Stadium. No, what are the Yankees doing? What is really gives a hoot what the Yankees are doing? But if you grew up in the Bronx, today I'm ashamed to tell you. I daven, I come to Gris, I eat breakfast, I start answering the questions that come in from across the world, and then I turn on my little computer that the boys at Gris gave me, and the boys taught me how to work, and during normal times, not tonight, the first website I go to are the New York Yankees. Westgate on, oh, that is fabulous. For 5 minutes, I am a kid again. By the way, in my new book, there's a whole discourse on why Gedolei Yisrael love baseball. And I'm ashamed to tell you that here's a new book, 530 pages, and the first part that has been reprinted, with my permission, it gives full acknowledgement to the publisher, to the author, is my excursions on baseball, a book that came out in Beit Shemesh recently on sports and halacha. And my little words there, those 5 pages, whatever, that is the introduction. So you see, you need someone who speaks English properly, who understands if they put a KGB agent against you who spent a few years in the United States, you are a real American, not just an American passport. Now, this went on, but something was happening in Russia. And here you have to understand the Six-Day War created tremendous Jewish identity. Many Jews wanted to leave. The Russians didn't know how to handle it. Do you let them out? At first they would let them out and hoping once they let them out, others would not want to leave. Then when they let out, others wanted to leave, so they put people into refusal, lost their jobs, terrible situation. Professors had to become elevator operators because everyone in Russia has to work or you're a parasite, you go to labor camp. Well, these Jews started to suffer. And when a Jew suffers, he asks questions. Why is it happening? Why is God doing this to me? Why have I lost my job? Why do I want to go to Eretz Yisrael? Why did I cry when I saw on the Russian TV the movie clippage of the boys and girls in Jerusalem building trenches before the Six-Day War so the Jordanian tanks would be stopped? When a Jew starts to ask questions, we have to be overjoyed. Moria Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik would say time and again, the whole Haggadah could have been written without the 4 questions. What do you need the 4 questions? Avadim, Hayinu, Lefaro. And yet the whole Haggadah centers around the 4 questions. And those of you who grew up in a Litvisha home, it's not just the little kid who asks. But the Gaon himself used to ask the 4 questions. And Rav Soloveitchik would say, when a Jew starts to question, he will reach truth and embrace Torah and tradition. So these Jews started to question. They went from communism to Jewish identity, to Zionist identity. Had they gone to Israel, they would have been Jews like all the other Jews. Golda Meir. I don't think Golda Meir wore a shaitel. Her mother covered her hair down to here. I saw pictures. A Jew like Golda Meir. A Jew like Ben Gurion. I don't think BG put tefillin on every morning. Correct me if I'm wrong. He has descendants who put on tefillin every morning, but he didn't. Shimon Peres. The man is going strong. It shows you a bracha from the Chafetz Chaim, how far it can go. When he was a little kid, his Zayda took him to the Chafetz Chaim, and the Chafetz Chaim had been benched. And boy, let me tell you, at his age, to be so alert and lively and with it and spontaneous and a good speaker, his politics are all wrong. But all right, there's freedom of choice in this world. So she developed in Russia for the first time. I'll mention his name. His picture appears in my book. When Malk and I meet him for the first time, January 1981, Elia Esas, the first nun Chabad Baal Teshuva. And I have to make clear, Chabad was always in Russia, and they were always functioning. And there were Chabadnikim who were Mesa Nefesh. Many were executed by Stalin. And they suffered. Under Khrushchev, there was a bit of a thaw. Brezhnev tolerated them. And I know Jews Chabadnikim who never were Mechalel Shabbos. The Holocaust, the communist era, you take the Fradkin family of Leningrad, what Mesirat Nefesh. But not everyone is a Chabadnik. Not everyone can fall into the Chabad category. Alitvak bleibt Alitvak. Elia Esas was from Vilna. What was his name? Eliyahu. And if you know Eliyahu Esas, I think deep in his subconscious mind, he is a Gilgul Neshama from the Vilna Gaon. And Eliyahu was not Chabad. Oh no. He reached Yiddishkeit in refusal, learning, studying. Once he reached, he influenced others. And the Mossad got a request, we need someone to teach Gemara. And I got a call, the most dramatic, important call of my life. Harav Rakefet, ata mukhan lekabel sicha b'li legarot et pratei hasicha. This is May of 1980, a call. Rabbi Rakefet, are you willing to accept the call? But you cannot tell anyone what the call is about. And I accepted it. And the boss got on, as we referred to Aryeh, Melech, his secretary, put him on. He said, I'm Aryeh. People told me you can teach Gemara. Don't know who told them until today. People told me you can teach Gemara. Would you be willing to go to Moscow and teach? And like a fool, I said yes. There are reasons why. Because I had students who had gone from America. And my wife always said to me, you'd be chicken if anyone asked you to go to Russia. Chicken, that's slang in English. Do you still know that slang or it's forgotten? It means a scary cat. Mefachei, pachtan, b'yivrit meduberet. And I said, yes. And then he said to me, who will you take? I said, my wife. He said, yafeh, nice, that's what I want. Who will take care of your three children? Oh boy, did I start to shake. Anyway, we were briefed from May until January. And we went, Moscow, Leningrad, Minsk, we were under arrest, but house arrest, hotel arrest. It's not like David Applebaum, whom I sent, who wound up in jail, Hashem Yikom Damo, Dr. David Applebaum. It was unbelievable what we saw. And we were never the same again. We came back shell-shocked, traumatized. Aryeh said, you can't talk about where you were for 2 weeks. Not a word. You say one syllable, you'll be in jail. At the end of 2 weeks, I'll tell you what you can say. And then you could say, we went to visit where our grandparents came from. Seek our roots. Never a word who sent you, how you got there. And I said to Aye, we got to continue this chain of learning Gemara. And Aye said, get me people. I said, Aye, I'm going to make a deal with you. I'm going to supply you with the shluchim. Or the shluchim in our Hebrew, shluchim in Lubavitch Hebrew, v'hamevin yavin. And Aryeh and I became partners, extremely close. Malk and I went back 2 more times when the Mossad felt we could get a visa and not have a problem. We sent over 200 people. We kept that chain going till the communist empire fell. But more than that, we did more than send teachers. Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Pesach, Shu'et, Sukkot, Hanukkah, Purim, we sent college kids, post-college kids. They were not supposed to teach. Their role was to go into shul and daven. And when they gave you an aliyah or gave you maftir, to read it in dignity. Our purpose was that the solemn Jews of Russia should see that Am Yisrael Chai. We're alive. We're kicking. We're producing a new generation. You have no idea what impact these youngsters had. They could not say they were from Israel. They had to lie, as we had to lie. Our visa application, we're from Queens. We had to pick streets we know, assure that we could answer a KGB agent where we daven. We had to pick professions, my wife a housewife. Unheard of in Russia, everyone works. What am I going to be? If I say I'm a lawyer, they can bring a lawyer. I say I'm a doctor, I'm not my brother. What do I know about medicine? Ah, but I picked it. The picture of my stationery appears in the new book. I picked one profession that no communist knew. Money. I was a money manager for Freedom Finance Company. What the hell I knew about money to go on the head of a king and leave room over for Rembrandt and Shakespeare. But at least I could double talk. And I got to tell you, in Riga, this was in 85, when they asked me, Shabbos, when we were making Kiddush, and the KGB was gone, and me and Fabrach, I do not even say that in English, but okay, let it stand, and we Fabrach, help me out, I don't know, we had a nice time together. So there, what do you do, what's footman, and how much money do you make? I told them, and I was an impoverished Israeli. This is before the Likud straightened out the Israeli economy. This is still post Yom Kippur War. I didn't have food. I had 2 full jobs. Didn't have food for the 4th week of the month. We used to go to Machon Gol. Some of you may remember. You thought I'm going to be a Rebbe to students. I was going to get food for Shabbos. But because I went, Nechama Leibovich came, and it was quite one water Shabbos, one after another. But and you know why I had no money? Because the whole economy was black. And I was a fool. Halavai, I could have been black. It's Midag HaMakom already. But I worked for the Israeli government. That was Michala, one paycheck, a government paycheck. The other paycheck, Machon Gold and BMT, was the Jewish agency. Go and try to convert an Israeli government check and a Jewish agency check into black money. Even I could not accomplish that. So here I tell the guy I make, 1985, $50,000 a year. Ach, they danced around me on Americana. You had was a macht. 50,000. They were jumping for joy and I was crying inwardly. They only knew the truth. So you should know, I'll tell you one story. I like the story as well in my new book. It's worthy of perpetuating it for eternity. About the Jewish people. It's an absolute true story. So among the 2 youngsters we sent were American kids who had come in Aliyah. And they're davening in Moscow. not in the main shul. Those of you who remember Maskia, there was the shtibel on the side. The shtibel had the old-time Jews from pre-revolutionary times, before 1917. There was a Rav Avram Miller there, who had yet learned with the Chafetz Chaim. There were a few old Chabadnikim who yet knew the fifth Rebbe, Rav Shalom Dov Be'er. And the kids are davening there, and it comes to the end of the davening on Yom Kippur. What do you shout in Skokie? I hope you mean it. L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim. In Russia, if you would say that aloud at the end of davening, you would wind up in Siberia. It is an offense to the communist Garden of Eden. You're not allowed to say that in Russia. So they reach the end of the davening, and the two kids are sitting there, and they knew Yiddish. They were second generation. It's not how I know Yiddish. I'm a third generation American. My parents were born in Harlem. I know Yiddish because in 1951, when I entered the Yeshiva University, if you didn't know Yiddish, you sang. It was either swim or sing. Habich gedacht, zebrechen, zebzena, a nice learning in Yiddish. But these kids knew Yiddish from the house. And two elderly Jews say to one another, I'll say first as they said it, then I'll translate. Ich verstehe nicht die Amerikaner Kinder. Sie können sagen, L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, und sie gehen nicht. Und mir, das ist our nächster Chalom, als mir können gehen, und todas und sie sagen, und mir will nur gehen. The American kids, I don't understand them. They can say L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim, and they can't go. And we, our fondest dream is to go, even though we can't say it. And these poor kids were sitting there crying. If only they could have jumped up and said, Morai v'Rabotai, we are from Jerusalem. We live there. We daven there. We study there. We serve in the Israeli army. And they couldn't say a word under instructions. And that is a true story. Let me come into present-day Israel. The miracle of the Russian revival of the Jewish people, in my humble opinion, or anyone who thinks, sees, experiences, is second only to the miracle of the State of Israel. God gave us a terrible punishment, the Holocaust. We don't understand it. Hence the punim. Only a fool will try to give explanations. And I'm among the fools. I gave lectures on this for months in the Cholel. But with all the explanations, it's Vayido Maharam. We bow before God. And then, what a miracle. With a handful of Jews, seven tremendous Arab armies opposite us, the State of Israel, which is an ongoing miracle. Do you understand right now what's happening? Continues to happen. Who would dream that missiles are being shot at Yerushalayim, which may land right on the Har HaBayit, on top of the mosques, the domes that are there? Only an Arab stupidity would allow him to shoot missiles that he doesn't have perfect guidance systems at Jerusalem. So it's a tremendous miracle. Russian Jewry? Who could have believed? You take Yosef Atzadik Mendelovich, who's here right now, my good friend, we're geknipting and buttoned, we're tied together since 1981, the day he arrived. I don't want to go into more detail, it occupies for the next hour. In my book, you'll see the picture of myself with Yosef Atzadik. His story is beyond words. If your teacher's here, you should be raising the children in your classroom. Here is a man who knew nothing about Jewishkeit, who as a teenager decides he wants to be a Jew, who tries to steal a plane, to rob a plane, to hijack a plane from Leningrad, winds up in jail for 11 years. He served more time than any of the other hijackers. Bronfman finally got him out. Kol hakavod to Bronfman and his whiskey. He had a deal with the Russians about their vodka, talking hundreds of billions of dollars involved, and he put in one condition. Yosef Mendelovich has to be let out of jail. And the Russians, 1981, finally backed down and freed him. In jail? He is a man. Didn't work on Shabbos. Read his memoir, what he went through. How many times he was put into solitary confinement. He is a man who didn't eat anything trench in jail. He is an individual that if they would not give him matzah for Pesach, he said he was going to fast, and they knew he would fast until he died. And the Russians were frightened because he was very well known in the Western world. Every kid growing up in America, every student of mine who went back to America knew the name Yosef HaTzadik. Tell you a story that I know from Yosef. Personal little story. Every year they got matzah for him from Israel through the Dutch embassy. They had no relations with Israel, but the Dutch embassy handled Israeli needs. And the KGB allowed it in, but before they allowed it in, they took off the wrapper so he shouldn't see Hebrew writing. One year, the matzah was late in coming. The KGB people were asleep on the job. And Erev Pesach, they bring in a bag of matzah with the originally Israeli wrapping on the matzah, with Hebrew letters, Aviv Matzah, made in Ramat Gan. Yosef told me that wrapper became his most precious possession. He held on to it to the day he got out. That's Yosef HaTzadik. Let me hear one similar story about any kid you know who grew up in the Bronx, talk about myself, or anyone who grew up in Sukkot. Such Mesirat Nefesh dedication. And you can multiply this story, not on the same level, by hundreds, by thousands. You come to my class Monday morning, I'll tell you an interesting story. Yosef Begun, do you recognize the name? Yosef Begun, the only prisoner of Zion who went to jail three different times for teaching Hebrew. I had a unique feeling for him because in one of my earliest classes in the American division of Mechala, I had a student named Tepper. And she tells me, Zelda, her mother, Zichrono Levracha, and Yosef Begun, rotting away in jail, are first cousins. Their fathers were brothers. One stayed behind after World War II. One got repatriated to Poland and from there wound up in America. And Meir Tepp is my student. She never paid a price for her Yiddishkeit. What a price he paid. So I knew who he was. We're in Moscow, 1980, the final day of Moscow. We meet our people where we have to meet them on the metro, and we travel way out to North Tel Aviv. Excuse me, North Tel Aviv. Halavai. To North Moscow. All the way north. I say, why are we traveling so far? Lama kol kach rachok mehamerkaz? Yesh lanu haftaah b'shulcha. We have a surprise. You'll understand. The picture appears in my book, because no one here will believe what I'm... I don't believe it myself. How could a little kid from the Bronx do all this? But the picture's in the book. And there, snuck into Moscow, between the second and third prison term, not allowed to enter Moscow, is Yosef Begun. And there's a picture of my teaching Gemara to Yosef Begun. I didn't realize how much it meant to him. In Yerushalayim, we struck up our friendship again. Monday morning he comes to my class. It's not Shas and Paiskim like Sunday. It's easier for him to understand. I'm dealing now, I deal with Hashgacha, whatever I dealt with, I dealt 22 years with Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. Now I'm dealing with a new topic altogether. It will take me a few years, the history of Torah in the United States. Yosef, think the young rabbis knew who he was? Oh, the outside is coming in, the retirees, the professors, the rabbi. Yosef, they come. But they went back to their apartments and they told their wives. Tell me, who are brighter, men or women? What do Chazal have to say? An open Gemara, Masechet Neva. So the men here will pardon me for being a feminist and declaring in public that women are more insightful, brighter than men, no two ways about it. Ah, the women. Yosef, they couldn't believe it. The next Monday, I couldn't believe how many cameras came to the classroom. How many pictures after class of Yosef and yours truly, the Rebbe, surrounded by the other Talmidim. Take one of me. Each one, they show his wife. He's within spitting distance of a great Jew named Yosef Begun. These Jews have come, they've changed the Israeli climate in every aspect that you can mention. Economically, Israel is thriving. You talk about the food industry, another 1.5 million people, what that did to the base in Israel. Whenever I would come to America, I would eat my kishkes out because Israeli products are cheaper here than in the United States than in Israel. Not any longer. The prices fall down. The bread available, the black bread, the healthy black bread, 15 different varieties. The labels on the products, no longer Hebrew and English. When we came, it was Hebrew and French. Today, it's Hebrew and Russian. You go into the hospital, the doctors, the nurses, the orderlies, 40, 50% Russians. I have a grandson studying in medical school in the Technion in Haifa. I believe your son went there, but he's in the Israeli program. Yeah, he's the third year. I know your son. You know that. So my grandson, they bring him in when he first starts. They want him to see the hospital. They bring him to a big professor. And the professor with a Russian accent, and he takes the kid in. These are two kids just starting medical school. He says, I want you to see, in the middle of a very important operation. And they take them in their first or second week in medical school, in the middle of an operation. I don't have to tell you the site. When I told it to my own doctor, who's a YU graduate, an Einstein graduate, he said, no, they did that to me too. The only difference is I fainted on the spot. But Baruch Hashem, my grandson had been a frontline medic in the army, so he didn't faint. But they're problems. Everyone says they're problems. Of course they're problems. And what? The American Aliyah, the Six-Day War didn't bring problems? You know how drugs got to Israel? The American kids who came with the beatniks, the liberals, the humanists, who suddenly wanted to see Israel, every problem came. What? We don't have problems in Israel? So we have more problems. But I want to tell you something. I founded and I helped organize an institution when we came back from Russia in 1981, an outreach for Russians called Merkaz Shvut Ami. There are other institutions today as well. I want to tell you, we've made hundreds of Russian people from. No, you make 100 people from, they marry. They're Balei Tshuva. They have 5, 6 children. 50 years later, out of 100 Russians that you made from, you can have 10,000 Jews believe u'benefesh. 100%. Their problems? Of course their problems. Have to reach out. Have to inspire. But who said there would be no problems? Open up Ezra and Nehemiah. And look at the problems they had. Bizman, Shivat Zion, of the Bayit Sheni. Our problems fade. by comparison. Problems there are, cannot be denied. I've lectured extensively on Gerut, conversion, inspiration, how to influence. But thank God we have these problems. They're no longer in Russia. They're no longer in the United States or elsewhere where assimilation is at their front door. They have political strength. They have Avigdor Lieberman, Shach HaChutz, the greatest sign that our foreign minister is a great individual, that all the Gentiles hate him with a passion. And Rav Soloveitchik used to say, Mori Rebbe, all the time, you judge a person by his enemies. The Rav. I know nothing, but I had great teachers and great students. I'm a bridge. Wow. Avigdor Lieberman? And I'll let you in at a little secret. You ready? Avigdor Lieberman is a Shomer Shabbos. Do you know it or you don't know it? No? His daughter became frum in elementary school. His daughter. Today she's perhaps pushing 30, in her 30s. Look at her picture in the newspapers. You don't see a strand of hair. A married woman. She made her mother frum. I want to tell you, if you know Russian women, if Avigdor were there, Michalel Shabbat, his wife would smack his face so hard that it would be heard in the Kremlin. But he keeps a profile. If you hear him speak, you can see through his words that he cares, that he's Jewish, that he's concerned. But he's trying to attract, you know, the average Russian. Some of them are yet distant. It's a challenge to us to set the example, to bring them up. So let me reiterate, and let me conclude with the Rav's Divrei Torah and my humble Divrei Torah. We have a lot to be thankful for. We Jews have seen great miracles. No one could ever imagine what would happen in Russia. The greatest advocate of Lubavitch in the world today is a man named Putin. And I'm not faking or putting it on. You have no idea. He's the happiest guy alive. Lev Levayev, George Roa, Horns. They bring in billions of dollars of investment into the motherland, Russia. And all they want in return is let the Jews live like Jews. Putin is the happiest guy alive. No one is better than a loyal Jew. Chabad is all over Russia. Yeshiva, shuls. And I'm one, you know, there was a whole debate in the Mossad. For years this debate goes on. Do we build Judaism in Skokie? Or do we tell everyone to come in Aliyah? And I have to tell you, in my humble opinion, you have to build Judaism all over the world wherever Jews are. And the smart Jews will come in Aliyah. We don't want everyone at once. Too much. Trumat Maisrat. The Torah tells us. Trumat Maisrat. It's a miracle. The Mossad played a tremendous role. I have just scratched the surface. I have about 4 or 5 chapters in my new book on the Mossad, only from my angle, only what I was involved with. I know that the Mossad is working now. It's 30, 40 years later. It's time to have memoir literature. They're working on a major work on what the Mossad did. How do I know this? Because when my book came out, they got in touch with me. Oh, we love what you wrote, and we love your pictures. Do you have more? I said, do I have more? I have about 100 pictures from every trip. We want to photograph them. They came to my office, I had to schlep them from the house with sophisticated equipment, and the Mossad has a copy of every Russian picture that I took, 81, 85, 89. It's going to be a lot written. But Aryeh Kroll, Ben-Gurion, Shaul Avigdor, Talmud, Essas, Rakefet, we need you. 200 shlichim, including, and I mention it specifically for obvious reasons, Dr. David Applebaum, Hashem Yikom Damo, and his daughter, Na'ava, Hashem Yikom Dama. problems? Of course there are problems. Look at Ezra and Nehemiah. Everyone was intermarried. What problems? Forgot the Torah totally. At least in Israel today, an election campaign began. I don't know whether it's going to continue, but I make a shachiyonu every morning. I can't believe what's going on in Israel. I've been there for every election since 69. Not one word against religion. It's beyond words. The Likud, two-thirds of Shem Shabbos. The Sarim, with a kippah, without a kippah, with a hair covered, without a hair covered. Not one word. Lapid, a Yingle, I don't know who he is, but number two in his party, Harab Shai Piron. His father was my boss in the army. Major General Rav Mordechai Piron, Zichrono Livracha. That was his father, Shai Piron, is a Ram in a Hesdi Yeshiva. Number two on the list. Shelly Achamovich, what remains of the old labor, is now a new party entirely. Danny Trapper's son, the young Trapper boy, wants to help the poor. Shomer Shabbos, 1,000%. Shelly Achamovich turned to Tzomet with headlines in every Israeli newspaper and requested a Shabbos microphone. You know what I'm talking about? All right, your rabbi has a loud voice. You don't need one here. Could be you'll have a rabbi, a weak voice, who wanted Tzomet microphone. You don't know what'll go on in the community. You think you've seen machlokes over the Erev? Wait till you try to bring in a Tzomet microphone. Suzain La Yehuda Maita Ora V'Simcha. And by the way, halachically it's not a problem. It's more of a political question. I don't want to go into details now, but I could explain how it works. But it was developed for the Israeli Navy, where you now have a lot of frum officers, and the only way to communicate on a boat, on a battleship, on a missile launcher ship, on a submarine, is by microphone. How do you communicate with Shabbos? So they developed the Shabbos microphone with all that implies. Shelly Achamovich says, if we meet on Shabbos, we will only use a Shabbos microphone to speak. Ben-Gurion is turning over in his grave. And if not Ben-Gurion, Paula is turning him over. That I can tell you. And let me conclude. And here we can be very proud of ourselves. In my work on the Rav, I believe it's in Volume 2. By the way, for the person here who's related to Joey Epstein, he was the editor of that volume. He helped me. It was a major work, because we had to go through tens of thousands of hours of recordings and papers and writings. And Joey was my right hand. That's why I list him. I could have thanked him in the introduction, but I wanted to. I listed him editor. So you'll see in the second volume, the Rav said time and again, I heard him with my own ears when the government sent me to address the RCA convention in 1977. The Rav said, comes Yom Kippur, we say Al Chayk. No, you say Al Chayk. How many of you have done even 10% of the sins that are mentioned in that Al Chayk? Wow. Anyone here from YU? Rabbi Ruchim Gerelik used to say to the class, you guys, the Bachim, you want pictures of the Al Chayk. That's Rabbi Ruchim's sense of humor. I don't want pictures. I don't even want to say it. But what can we do? The Rishonim already discussed it, and because some Jews might have done the sin and they might be embarrassed to say it alone, so we all say it together. And the Rav used to say, but for the one sin we did do, we don't say. And the Rav wanted to make a one-line addition to the Al-Chayt. World War II, we heard our brethren cry, and we did nothing. The great American jury stood still. Roosevelt ruled over us. Reform rabbis Weiss, Abigail Silver, Weiss, don't rock the boat. Hundreds of thousands were killed weekly. And we did nothing. And the Rebbe said we have to ask Eden al-Chayt, al-Chayt she-chatanu lufanecha she-shamanu kol psa-chat achenu be-Rabba v'lo asinu dai v'lo asinu maspik. The hate that we heard our brethren in Europe crying, and we didn't rise to the occasion. When it came to Soviet Jewry, the Anglo world could stand up proudly and say, we heard the cry and we responded. And finally, look at the miracle. Beautiful pasuk that you say in the Musaf of Rosh Hashanah. Shofar, when you talk about the shofar being blown, Ubashofar gadol yikaka bayom ahu, the prophet says, a large clarion call will be made. Ubo ho din bi eretz Ashur, vahanitachim bi eretz Mitzrayim. And Jews will respond. What type of Jews? Ha'ovdim be'eretz Hashur, the Jews that got lost. No one persecuted them. Eretz Hashur, Lashon Osher, wealth, the Anglo world, Australia, Canada, the United States. No one bothers us. No one persecutes us. Everyone is free to be Shomer Shabbos, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha. But we got lost, assimilated. The pull, the call, the charisma, the outside world, our role models, President Obama. When I was growing up, Kennedy, Clinton, who got flowers every Friday. You don't get that, okay? You're not old enough or you're too old. Jennifer, forget it, not important. Our role models. And those who were pushed away deliberately, vigorously, Eretz Mitzrayim in lands of affliction. The greatest example, the Soviet Empire. Then they wake up, Vishtachavu Lashem Bahar HaKodesh B'Yerushalayim, and they will bow to the Lord on the holy mountain, Jerusalem. Who would believe that in our time we have seen this fulfillment in a tangible, overwhelming, and inspiring fashion? Come to the Kotel Friday night. You'll hear every language spoken. Tens of thousands of Jews being Mekabel Shabbos, all within walking distance, some short walks and some much longer walks. Your brother has a short walk, I have a long walk. You'll hear English, you'll hear Russian, and every other language. Come to the Kotel, Hoshana Rabbah, Birchat Kohanim, Shavuos morning at sunrise, you will see more than 100,000 Jews, the Hishtachavu LaHashem, Bahar HaKodesh. We have a lot to be thankful for, a lot to be inspired by, and mitzvah goreret mitzvah. What we achieved until now has to be very small compared to what we will achieve in the years and decades ahead. Abiyat Mashiach Tzidkenu, B'mehera B'yameinu, Amen Selah.
Thank you, Rav Rakefet. It's interesting how Rav Rakefet spoke of Yosef HaTzadik, but he didn't speak of Aaron HaTzadik. We all now know a little bit about the role of Rav Rakefet and his Rebbetzin, and we have to be makir tov for all that they've done for Jews from the former Soviet Union and also for thousands of the rest of the Jewish people, dedicating his life to teaching Torah and spreading Torah. May all of us take even a little bit away from tonight's lecture and actualize it and use our potential to follow his wonderful example. Yasher Koach, Abiyas Gol Tzedek, may you continue in good health. Again, Abiyas Gol Tzedek. At this time, We have the famous Kesar Marav, Malava Malka chocolate fountain that's just waiting for all of you with marshmallows and strawberries. The Tayavon.